people who love them.
Hello and welcome back. This is the Thing About Cars. We are sitting here in Strongbox West doing another recording. It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta. Glad you joined us wherever you happen to be. As always, please find our Facebook page, The Thing About Cars, on Facebook, and drop us a note, send us a picture of what you're driving and what you might be wrenching on. So with me at the table today, again, we have...
Becca.
Ben.
Matt.
And we're just going to jump right into it. We were sitting here talking between episodes a second ago, and I'm just going to come right out and say it, that I am not a fan of pull apart.
And I want to know why.
Yeah, why?
Well, when I last went to a pull apart, which was recently, they charge an admission fee before you can even go look at the...
Yes, you do. Yeah. Yes, they do. You're right.
And then you can go look at the rust bucket that sits out there and without any guarantee that you're going to find what you need on that thing. So if I then go out there looking for parts for my Mazda, I could take a look at this thing and determine that there are no parts in it. I'm still out the admission fee, which is just $2, but it's still the principle of the matter to me.
Right. So I understand that.
I don't get my used part. I don't get my $2 back. What they graciously tell me is that, oh, yeah, you can take your admission ticket and go to any pull apart in the city, which in this city, I'm going to spend more than $2 in gas getting from any pull apart to another.
Yeah, they're pretty far apart. But how many other junkyards can you look to see their vehicle inventory?
There are others. And here's the other thing I like about others. Those other junkyards, even if I can't walk them, those guys will at least pick up the phone and talk to me. Pull apart will not. Their phone system.
That is true. I have tried. You cannot get a live human being from pull apart.
And they tell you that. They
and
tell
it doesn't you that matter how much out. You mash on the zero, right. They will not give you a human
they
being.
They flat out say, forget it, you're not talking to anybody. So you got to come there, pay $2 in order to find out that you can't get anything, and then you got to leave.
It really sounds brilliant on their part, though.
I guess. But see, this is where it comes in handy, not only with Mustangs, but being a woman. There is I don't know if they really want to be called a junkyard or a salvage yard or anything. There's Mustangs Parting Out up in Winder, shameless plug, that I can call up there as a woman and use my best Southern accent and talk to them. And I just get discounts and shipping, and they'll send it to me. I don't even have to come up there and pull it off the car.
You are so setting back.
The way I look at it is,
I got a $220 part for $75. I don't care. I'm setting back women for that one.
I do the same thing. Like, I'll sweet talk the girl at AT&T into all kinds of stuff. You know?
See there, and he brought me right back up. It's not just women. Thank you.
If you do want to pay good money to walk around and look at junk cars, and I wish I would have thought of this, I could have researched it before. Of course, I didn't know you were going to say they charge admission until we start rolling, so I didn't have time to research it. But we could put it on our website or something, on our Facebook.
Yeah.
There is a guy somewhere in North Georgia, and I can't remember his name or what town he's in, but he's got a wooded property.
Are you thinking about the place up in Cartersville?
I don't know which place he's talking
I cannot of. Think of the name of it, but he charges admissions, and you walk around and look at rusted out cars, and
he'll
charge
right,
a small
yeah.
fortune. You could actually buy one of them, but they have trees growing out of them. And
yeah, these are old American, classic iron with trees growing out of them. They're rotting away on his land. There's a nice trail between them, so it's not very dangerous.
He's selling his services to photo shoots. Where he's selling his land to people who want to do shoots.
No, you pay money to walk around anybody on the lot and look at rotting cars.
I think he charges $10 more if you bring a camera or something. It's a little bit of a ripoff, but it's there if you want to do it.
Yes, it's in Cartersville. I can't remember the name of it right now.
Old Car City.
There, yes. Old Car City.
That's it.
Sounds about right. Well, old cars, and right there's a link for admission, so that must be it.
The place is called Old Car City, and it is technically in White, Georgia, which I guess is near Cartersville. And yeah, charging admission, he's pretty blatant about if you're showing up for your picture, it costs you like $10 more per person.
And who doesn't show up with a camera?
It's crazy.
We all have cameras nowadays.
So are we panning this guy or not? Are we praising him or not?
No. I think it might have just been
a
comparison.
Yeah. If you want to blatantly pay to look at junk cars, then...
Then yeah. Exactly. At least these cars have some historical value attached to them. Old rust buckets are still better than recent rust buckets, especially when I'm not trying to pull something useful from them. I remember when you could just walk on the lot and browse around and see what you needed and show back up to the cashier with a bucket full of stuff and you were fine.
Right.
I actually gave them a very bad Yelp review. I might delete that too.
Why
now?
That'd
be a sponsor.
No, because then they're not getting a shameless plug. You don't want them to get a plug out of it, do you?
Well, he can say, I just need Pull Apart to show me that they're a little more customer focused.
That would be very nice. I would love to find out that they're open to doing such a thing, but considering that they've completely, like, they used to have that. They used to have the, they used to have a very big customer service ethic, and now they very clearly don't. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, WD-40. And Becca was giving, was busting our chops that we're all car people, but none of us have a can of WD-40 in the trunk to fix the squeaky chairs that we have here in the studio.
We keep moving around and making... Yeah, see, mine did that earlier too, Yes.
So the thing I always think about with WD-40 is that it's not my favorite lubricant, right? It kind of sucks in many ways. But the other thing is that there's this urban legend going around that WD-40 is fish oil. And it is not. But I've actually had a friend or two perpetuate the myth that, can you believe it? It's fish oil. And and there's this thing that gets forwarded. It's the kind of thing that you would have to check out on Snopes. And Snopes, in fact, says it's actually closer to being diesel. WD-40 is more closely associated with diesel than
petroleum distillate.
Right.
It's the stuff that rises to the very top of the refining process.
Exactly.
But, so what do you prefer then? If you do not like WD-40, which one would you like to apply?
It depends on what I'm fixing, but I like PB Blaster.
Because there's what? There's that one. There's Deep Creep. There's...
I never used Deep Creep.
Doesn't Seafoam have a version?
Seafoam might have something in an aerosol version. But it's basically just a very, very, very thin oil anyway, isn't it?
That's what they all are, yeah.
Yeah, with a little detergent in it, I think.
Right.
And I love Seafoam in the engine.
I love Seafoam, yeah.
But WD-40, not my thing. But if I'm cleaning a firearm, I have other things that I will rely on. In fact, PB Blaster, surprisingly enough, is not a bad cleaning agent for a firearm.
There's irony in that.
Yes.
And there's actually no PB in their name. I looked at my can the other day. It's just called Blaster.
Oh, they've changed their name then.
Is it too different?
Or my can's about 2 years old. So you get a lot of life out of that can about yay big. Of course, I don't just hose things with it. I spray where I need, and it's.
Well, it depends on how you're using it.
Yeah. Well, if I need to hose something, I'm going to dunk it in something.
Well, if you're trying to get a car part off, you're under the car, you can't dunk it. It's hopelessly stuck on there.
Well, but too much, a lot of hosing just becomes wasteful. Spray what's going to creep in, let it creep in, tap it a little bit, spray a little more, let it creep in. But just hosing, if it's running off, you've sprayed too much.
PB does make Blaster folks do make a catalytic braking solution as well. It comes in an aerosol. Yeah. But it's meant to be able to break away nuts that are frozen.
And for those things that it won't damage by doing so, I'm a big fan of using heat.
By the way, penetrating oil.
Thank you. That's the term.
Yeah. Yes, I got in trouble for that because one of my good lifelong friends is a master mechanic. And one day I had to get creative doing the rear brakes on one of my Mustangs. It would not let go. That nut was stuck. Yeah. I had pulled out the breaker bar, the cheater bar, but I only had so much room because the angle I had to be in that fender well to get this one off. So I went in there with a plumber's torch because it's small. He's yelling at me about the brake lines and this and that. And I said, well, it's done. So obviously I did okay and I didn't hit the brake lines. But I went there with a plumber's torch and just heated that bad boy up and boop, knocked him off. Don't do this at home, okay? Yeah. I probably should have said that first.
Right.
Don't try it at home.
Right. Boiling brake fluid is not a good idea.
I didn't hit the brake line. It was just the nut.
Right.
I had an engine one time. This is, of course, a motorcycle engine, but you may have a similar trouble with a car. Although the solution may not be as easy with a car just due to size limitation. It was a 1990-something BMW. It was one of the classic Boxer twins. It's not a real big engine. It's wider than anything else, but... I had to do a top end rebuild on it. It dropped a valve and ate one whole side of the engine. Really, really nasty, gnarly business. But in the process, I was trying to get the timing chain apart. It's a chain that's probably, the loop of it's about the size of your face. It's got two little sprockets on it. One sprocket would not come off of the crankshaft. And I heated it up with the torch. I banged on it with hammers. I put all kinds of penetrants on it. Nothing. So finally I thought, okay, try to do a heating cooling cycle. I had, ladies and gentlemen, this is no bull. I had this engine minus its cylinders inside my refrigerator. I was a bachelor living in an apartment, so I could get away with this. I had the crankcase inside my refrigerator. down in the bottom where the crisper drawer would be, and once it had been in there overnight and got good and cold, I pulled it out of the fridge and hit it with a torch.
See, this is when you need it, one of those big freezers.
Well, no, it didn't work.
Mine worked. I'm just saying right now, mine worked.
I did this several times. I did cycles of this over a week, and it did not work. I just was not. I was using big pullers and everything.
Maybe the problem was that it was a space lease sprocket.
That could be.
You should have been using a Cogswell cog, and it would have come out much better.
Yeah, I got it to move about a quarter inch. It needed to go about an inch and a half, but I got it about a quarter inch, and the further it got, the slower it got. And eventually, and I was at the point where I was starting to cut it off with a rotary tool.
Yeah.
Eventually, I just sold the carcass of the bike. You know, the recession hit at that point. I needed some cash, but I'm pleased to report that the guy who bought it did get it all back together and running, and it looks good, and he's enjoying it.
Okay, so we came all the way here from WD-40.
Right. lubricants involved in the story.
Yes, absolutely.
At least it went the direction of vehicles and lubricants this time.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so absolutely. On the right direction, the
absolutely
right path here.
Right. It was a definite thing. Ben has said before that Ferrari is the Catholic Church of automobiles. What does this mean exactly?
And I don't mean any. If either Ferrari owners or Catholics are lighting their torches, please, I'm not trying to offend you. But
we're going to have some pitchforks and right. torches out the doors.
Well, it's kind of weird. They've got kind of a weird parochialism in how they do things. It's like the edicts come down from on high that things will be a certain way.
Thou shalt not pump regular gasoline.
They're very much a kind of a control organization. They've got this kind of a certain holiness. You know, you have to be at a certain level of customerhood before they'll even let you do certain things. They've got several different model programs that are by invitation only, and they don't authorize a whole lot as far as things that mention them mm-hmm. or are done with them.
So I'm scratching my head a little bit. So your last part is, I understand that. Are they actually saying, here's what you can and can't do with our cars, though?
Sometimes.
That you own this vehicle, but we're going to say you can't do this? Or is it just when their name is going to come up somewhere? Or what do you mean?
It's kind of an image control taken to a further degree.
They don't want anybody racing out the cars.
Well, I'm sure there's
That's the history of Ford and some things. I don't think
are they
anybody.
Killing people?
Oh, my goodness, no.
Oh, okay.
No. But there was a nasty. Anyway, it started with the Black Mustang Club. Okay, there was a number, however many of people that were in the Black Mustang Club. And it's exactly as it sounds. If you own a Black Mustang, you're, you know, club member. You couldn't come in with, you know, red Mustang. So they had decided to make a calendar for their members only. And it featured their own vehicles. And they went to somewhere like Vistaprint, but it wasn't mm-hmm. Vistaprint. It was one of the earlier to make the calendar. And then they charged their members per calendar just to defer the cost. You know, we spent all this money making a club calendar, pay for the calendars. They're not free. Someone, I think, at the company that was making the calendars got some kind of bug up their butt or something and notified Ford that they were selling calendars using the Mustang images.
Mm-hmm.
And Ford Corporate came down, the ethereal daddy or something, wagging their finger, and it became this giant. But it didn't stop there. It's like they opened a door. And Ford had looked around and saw all these various people using their names. Like I had briefly mentioned Mustang's parting out earlier. They changed their name to MPS so that the word Mustang was not involved. It was taking down websites and car parts and things left and right. But in the end of the day, they ruled on the side of Black Mustang Club, because once you buy that vehicle, you still own the rights to that vehicle's image. And they weren't widely selling it to everybody.
Right.
It was just for them. So in the end of the day, they were okay. But in the wake of it, and we're talking about a Georgia Mustang Club.
This is why I think you need to let fan fiction happen. You know, mm-hmm. it's like you have to let folks appreciate what they've got. And people aren't going to go out and re-engineer an entire Mustang to build.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and who cares if somebody makes $5 off of your image. You're still perpetuating the name. It's still, you know.
By golly, we're going to stop you from selling those 1,000 calendars.
Yes. I just. But Ford has a process. You are supposed to submit to them in order to be licensed, and then you can share the profits with them. And they have a program.
Well, we've got the kind of legal system where if somebody does not go after somebody, then that can be legally used as a precedent to say, you don't defend your brand.
Right.
Right. But then if you go after your brand in cases like this, then you're just a wackadoo.
What you can't see, our listeners, is the Mustang that Ben is showing Becca. Becca, of course, has a major soft spot for all things Mustang. And Ben's sweetheart has inherited
It's a 65 convertible. Yeah. First full year of production, first year of the convertible, and it was purchased new by her father.
See, and to me, this is porn. So I'm going to wander off to the corner to be by myself for a minute. I'm going to take your phone with me.
And the dealer he bought it from is still in business.
That's amazing.
So what provenance, you know?
Right, exactly. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before.
Yes, we have.
So, Becca, you were ranting. I think we should go ahead and revisit that since we have some editing to do here. But let's go from the top.
What had started it? I don't remember exactly what started it. There had been a post on our Facebook, though, discussing if people's driving abilities was getting worse. And I actually think that technology is a big part of that. We're getting used to these things that are giving us creature comforts. It used to be you had to pay attention. You had to watch your gauges, you had to watch your blind spots, there were certain things. It's like even in my Mustang that's not even that old, it predates traction control for a Mustang. So when it's raining outside, you need to be on your game. Nowadays, that's okay. If you go too fast, the car has, it's got you. You don't have to worry about it. Some cars, you don't even have to check your blind spots. There's a light that'll tell you if there's somebody next to your car. It tells you there's lights that come on to tell you when your gas tank is low. No offense, Matt.
I don't believe in technology in cars, so I don't pay attention to those indicators.
Mine was more old school learning on Fox chassis, where if you didn't watch your foot in the rain, you're going to spin around a whole lot. It's just, I have to wonder if these comforts are not making us lazy in paying attention. We get so used to the car doing stuff for us that we're just not as honed at a skill anymore.
All right, I got a thought about this. Our friend Kathy just bought a new Honda CR-V.
Oh, yeah.
It has all the bells and whistles in it. It tells her if she's drifting. It tells her if she's nodding off. It tells her if her gas is low. I mean, it has warnings for everything. And she's like, Mickey, I love this car, and it's a great car. She's like, but I didn't realize I was such a bad driver.
Nice.
What are you talking about? She's like, well, it warns me every time I turn around. The turn signal's either on too long or it hasn't been on at all. And it turns on the signal for her, I think, or it tells her that it needs to go on. Some warning takes place.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, that's the opposite end of it, that you have this car that's programmed to do a number of different safety things. Maybe that makes the world a better place, even if it makes you a softer driver.
And I understand how it evolved into that, because there are so many terrible drivers out there that, okay, the car companies are trying to compensate to help protect people, but doesn't that keep pushing us further into laziness and not paying attention and therefore being even worse? Is it not a bad cycle? I don't know. I mean, maybe it's me. I think people would be much better drivers if they practiced, if they paid attention.
Yeah.
I think, though, and I don't know if this has something to do with the original question or not. I mean, again, the original question is technology making people, is driving skill decreasing overall? And I think, though, that the issue isn't really about driving as much as it is about responsibility and convenience. And people don't want to take responsibility for their stuff, mostly because it's hardly inconvenient to take responsibility for anything.
Oh, agreed. But yeah. Isn't that after the accident?
Right.
Well, how about we consider this, right? Human nature in general is just drifting towards being more lazy, right?
Like,
it's very unfortunate.
If all four of us right now had no technology and we had to create a working farm, you think we could do it?
I could do it.
I could do it.
Do you think I could do it?
No.
Exactly. That's my point. See, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't even know where to get seeds for stuff, with, you know, without having to use technology to get it, you know?
Or, you know, if you couldn't go down to the farm. If you couldn't go to Amazon and order seeds.
Exactly.
Seeds come from the plant that you'd want to grow, just so you know.
So I gotta go, find a cucumber plant? I don't even know what that looks like.
So, yes, I understand what you're saying, and I agree that human nature does seem to go that direction, but shouldn't we be more conscientious about things where, you know, instead of making the cars do everything for us at some point, shouldn't we say, bring back mandated driving classes in high school in order to get your certificate for your learner's permit?
And should make them more stringent.
Yes, increase the hours needed for an actual driver's license once you've gotten the permit. Shouldn't we increase the education and the practice of it?
I hear these things. And yeah, on the one hand, we're talking about putting in a whole new level of restrictions or requirements for people to be able to get their licenses. In the rest of the world, or at least in the rest of my waking time, I'm like, we have too much government already.
Oh, no. That's another tangent. I promise I'm not walking down that path. I fully agree. We have too much government. But I'm also talking more about public safety as opposed to Big Brother standing over you.
It's a lot easier to kill somebody with a car than with almost any product we have.
Any other implement. I mean, when I was growing up, when I was a kid, my dad used to explain to me that a car inspection back in those days, it was like the MOT things that they used to do in Great Britain, right? They would walk around your car, they would check all your lights. You couldn't have an unaddressed, a jagged metal on your car if you'd been in an accident, that would not fly. Mm-hmm. Dents were fine. Your windshield wipers had to work. There was a host of things that they had to make sure your car was doing correctly before they would let you drive it again.
Right.
And give you the sticker. And now all they do is check your emissions, which we know is something of a racket anyway. And, you know, Georgia is in the minority of the states now that actually makes you go jump through those hoops in order to drive your car. Where's the rest of the inspection that says, yes, your car actually is safe for the interstate?
They're getting very lax on the safety. I completely understand the emissions. It's a thorn in my side, obviously. That poor H-pipe has been sitting in my garage for way too long. I can't put it on the car because of the emissions. But I understand it, the air quality, all that. I understand why we have it. It's a necessity, but they're definitely getting further and further away from just the safety. But they're building in. They're trying to compensate for the people making these cars take over what used to be common sense for drivers way back when.
But again, that's the same with everything. Like, right now, the generation coming up has no idea, like underage kids getting into a club have no idea you can put a $20 bill behind an ID and hand it to the bouncer and get in. They have no idea because they are just oblivious to it.
That knowledge has been lost.
I mean, of course, don't do that at home.
But why should we continue to say, oh, well, knowledge has been lost. We're not practice at it. All right, let's just compensate. How about we get back into the practice of paying attention?
I'm bringing it back.
You're personally bringing it back.
Well, and I know a guy, too. Mickey and I both know this guy. He has a young daughter, and he has expressed the thought that he hopes that autonomous cars take over by the time she turns, you know, driving age.
Maybe he's just worried about her driving ability.
Well, I'm not sure what it's all about, but I haven't really probed him on it. But that's another interesting thought, you know. And I think she's got about 11 or so years before that point. But it's an interesting idea.
Still, for me, goes back to the basic issue of responsibility.
If
you're going to climb behind the wheel of the car, by the time you hit that key in the ignition, you should know how to change a tire. You should know how to check your oil.
Should know how to check your blind spots.
You know where your blind spots are and how big they are,
Failing that, know how to not run over somebody.
Right.
I would say know how to avoid an accident safely.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Because things are going to happen that aren't you causing it, and you need to know how to react. You know?
Mm-hmm. There used to be defensive driving courses that you could take that would teach you just that, what to do in certain extreme, I guess, situations, but extreme being an everyday occurrence around Atlanta.
Right.
You know, what pothole just opened up in the middle of the drip, in the middle of the bridge?
Right.
Here's how you avoid it.
So speaking of which, that bridge is ready to go. It's open today.
It opened last night, I thought. Yeah. There was a countdown that kept popping up on my phone from the news channel.
On the way down here today, it was not open. Because the cops still had it blocked off. Yeah, I exited at Peachtree, and they still had it blocked.
Because the Amber Alerts signs down by me said, it's now open. Go have fun. Have another traffic jam.
No, everything I've heard is said Monday morning.
I don't think that was an Amber Alert.
No, that wasn't an Amber Alert. But I wanted to start to take bets. It's like, okay, when they open it, how long will it be before the first traffic jam occurs in exactly the same spot?
32 minutes and 37 seconds. There's my square. That's
I wonder if somebody hacked the sign. Yeah, because that did happen in Austin. Yeah. Somebody hacked a traffic sign to make it say zombie attack. Yeah.
That's what I was just going to ask you about, if you'd seen the one about the zombies.
You're generous with your 32-minute estimate there. I said it'll take 20 minutes, and then they're going to have their first traffic jam.
Well, if it's Monday morning, it's probably going to jam right away.
Oh, so. Wow.
I actually had another thought about the self-driving cars.
What's that?
Yeah.
So we're not going to go full self-driving right away. Of course, legislators and everybody's going to want to try to keep people behind the wheel. So what if they were self-driving, but there still had to be a human, and the human that they used were people like, you know, disabled veterans or, just people who normally wouldn't be working at all, but now they'll be able to have enough control over a car.
So what, they're just watching to make sure the self-driving car is
safe,
doing...
It doesn't do anything reckless.
By the way, it's actually been a while now, but there was already an accident involving a self-driving car, if anybody has seen that news article.
I remember one where
I'm looking it up right now.
I think
it was a Google car, wasn't it?
The first one I see is that a self-driving Tesla was involved in a fatal crash.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was in July of 2016.
Well, the Tesla is not fully autonomous.
Right.
Yeah, and they were kind of...
You are supposed to keep watching it. It's basically, it'll go down the interstate by itself. It'll park itself. That's about it.
And here's another one. Uber suspends its self-driving car program after a crash in Arizona.
Whoa!
But there's another thing that nobody knows how to do hardly anymore. Parallel park. I'm afraid to watch
right
a parallel
park.
Drive
right up on the curb and then just come back off.
Oh my goodness.
I'm just kidding. No, I do not have a parallel park.
It's an art form. I think that's all we have time for today. We're going to wrap up this episode by saying thanks again for listening to us. We are The Thing About Cars, recording within Strongbox West. With me at the table are a bunch of wonderful people, and I sound like I'm doing an intro again. So I think we're just going to say goodbye. Check us out on our webpage, thethingaboutcars.com, or our Facebook page. And we'll look forward to talking with you guys again soon. Take care.
Bye.
Later, y'all. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.